You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Yana. Yana is in Massachusetts, and she reached out about one of her clients with whom she's currently working with some questions about what she perceived to be some resistance to the process and parents' concerns about behavior as a result of starting the play therapy process. So I'd like to read you her question and then share some thoughts. And Yana, thank you so much for sending a question and for reaching out. I appreciate it. I think this is something that is helpful for all of us. So this is something I'm excited to dive into. So her email says, I'm hoping you could provide some child-centered strategies and feedback on how to best support my client. I have a 7-year-old female. She's here for anxiety. Her presenting problems are fear of vomiting, germs, mold in food, and getting sick. I believe this might be a trauma response from the pandemic. And then she says, I'm feeling lots of pressure from parents as her anxiety symptoms have worsened since summer is approaching. More specifically, she's refusing to go to summer camp. She's refusing to eat lunch in the cafeteria and at times refuses to go outside. Parents also shared that the child has started to wash her hands constantly throughout the day because of germs and needs a lot of reassurance that she will not get sick. And then Yana said, I'm curious about an OCD diagnosis, but I've not yet discussed it with parents. So then the question continues, in the playroom, we've established great rapport and trust. However, I'm concerned because she remains in the resistance stage. Her play consists of arts and crafts, drawing and coloring, all very pretty things like hearts, flowers, etc. I've opened the door for her to feel safe playing out or sharing scary feelings, and I've said statements such as, you know, this is a space where you play and share anything you want, even very scary feelings about germs. She has not taken these opportunities and becomes very guarded and avoidant when I say these statements. I know that she may not be ready to do the work, but I'm wondering if I should be doing something else. Some folks in the field are recommending transitioning to directive play therapy, but I want to remain true to CCPT. I've increased our sessions to twice a week because her anxiety symptoms are worsening. All right. So Yana, thank you so much. I appreciate this. This is actually a multi-layered scenario. So we're going to dive into quite a few aspects of this. So first and foremost, I'm just going to kind of hit highlights. This isn't in the order of arrival, but this is the order in which I processed it. So whenever you have pressure from parents, and this is really relevant to all of us because we are always going to have parents with high expectations, and they're going to be wanting immediate fixes and solutions that come fast. And they don't understand the process, so they're not patient, and they are expecting things to get better. So there's all of these expectations and pressures that come from parents. This also happens with school personnel at times. So when you have pressure, in this case, you said that you're feeling lots of pressure from parents as her anxiety symptoms have worsened. So obviously that is a layer, something we certainly need to talk about. If there is any kind of communication like this from anyone really in the child's life, but specifically parents, this becomes an articulation issue. And what I mean by that is it is our job as child-centered play therapists to help parents understand from our first touch point with that family to the very end termination process with that family. They need to understand what to expect. It is our job that falls on us. It's our responsibility to articulate and communicate and explain the process. And so that means we have to discuss the 4 stages with them before they even start treatment. If you didn't, if you're listening to this and you're going, oh man, I've royally screwed this up. I have never said any of this to any parents. There's no timestamp that you need to, you know, go back and click on. So you just need to address this immediately now. So even if you've been working with a family and you did not do this beforehand, it is imperative that as soon as possible, you get parents knowledgeable about the process. So you're going to go over the stages. You're going to go over the phases. You're going to go over the expectations. You're going to help them understand the entire process. Why? Because if they truly understood this, and if this had been communicated in a way that they fully grasped, they would understand that this is normal. And so when you're working with a child and symptoms get worse, that is normal. When you're working with a child and they go through regression and resistance, that is normal. When behavior symptoms get worse before they get better, that is normal. So it falls on us, and the onus is always in our court, that we have to communicate to parents what they need to understand. And therefore, the outcome is that you remove doubt in their minds about the process. Because they have to come to learn to trust you, they have to come to learn to like you, and they have to come to learn to know you. Know, like, and trust. Those are your three factors. So the best way to do that is to articulate and communicate and explain and educate. So right off the bat, when I read this, my gut says this is an articulation issue. So it is your job, all of your jobs, I'm not just speaking to you, Yana, all of us, it is our job to make sure that we are articulating this process well. Will a parent ever fully understand what's happening in the playroom? Of course not. But can you give them the stages and the phases and the process and the expectations and actually say things like, it's going to get worse before it gets better? And you're probably going to see resistance, which is where this happens. And you might see regressive behavior where this happens. And all of those things need to be clearly communicated. That sets everyone up for success. So that's my first thought. My second thought is, Yana, you specifically mentioned, I'm concerned that the client remains in the resistance stage. And I understand why you say that. However, I'm actually going to throw a little bit of a curveball here. I don't read anything that you described as resistance. So when she's doing arts and crafts and drawing and coloring hearts and flowers, etc., I know that may seem resistant because in your definition, I think you're understanding that as she's avoiding and resisting the work that she should be doing by replacing it with this art and craft play. So I understand the concept that you use to get there. But I would actually argue that her doing arts and crafts and drawing and coloring, that is safety and comfort play for her. She's not resisting. Resisting often almost always comes out in huge behavior upticks, huge levels of refusal, disobedience, anger, aggression. There's usually big stuff that comes out during resistance. At the very least, a child that says, I don't want to play today, or I don't want to go, or I don't want to be here, or I don't know what to do. That's kind of the minimum you get. And then it goes all the way to the other end of the spectrum where they refuse to come back and they run and they hit you and they headbutt and whatever. So that is typical resistance. I don't actually see what you're describing here as resistance. I see this as safety and comfort play for her. And does that mean she's not ready yet? Yes, 100%. But what that means is she's just building up the bandwidth and building up the capacity to address the anxiety and the fear and the worry and the all-consuming scary thoughts that she has about everything in her life not being safe. Those are really, really hard issues to tackle, especially at 7. So she's going to need a lot of buildup to get there. Anxious kids need buildup anyway because they're anxious. So you already have double whammy there. She's an anxious kid and she's fearing the fear. So that is what I describe as a safety and comfort play. So not particularly resistant, just not ready yet. So I think that's a noteworthy piece of this as well. And you mentioned specifically, quote, I've opened the door for her to feel safe playing out or sharing scary feelings. And I've said statements such as, you know that this is a space where you can play and share anything you want. If you would have stopped right there, that would have been child-centered. But by saying even very scary feelings about germs, we've now pivoted into directive and pushing an agenda. So The child-centered non-directive model trusts that the child knows what they're struggling with. It trusts that they want to get better. And it trusts that if you give them the time, the tools, and the opportunity with the right relationship, they will do it. So therefore, with that in mind, she's in there and she knows what she needs to do and she'll do it when she's ready and able. But by saying, you can even talk to me about very scary feelings and germs, all of a sudden now she knows that that is your expectation. She knows that that's why she's there and that you want her to address those things. So it becomes agenda-driven and it becomes directive and it becomes leading. And therefore, your next statement, she has not taken these opportunities and becomes very guarded and avoidant when I say these statements. Of course she does. Because it's very clear that she doesn't actually have freedom. She doesn't actually have control. She's not actually in charge. What everyone wants her to address is this overwhelming fear and anxiety. Well, when a kid knows that everyone wants them to do something, they're going to do the exact opposite. And that's why the child-centered model works, because the child-centered therapist is the only person in the child's life that says, I don't care what you talk about. I don't care what you play about. I don't care what you feel comfortable bringing up and what you don't. I don't care how long it takes you to start dealing with this stuff. I don't care how much you resist. I don't care how long you color hearts and flowers. None of that matters to me because the only thing I care about is you. Just as you are in your current state with all of your overwhelming anxiety that's crippling to you, I love and accept you just how you are. Be with attitudes are conveyed. And when you're ready, I trust that you'll deal with it. That is a huge shift. And we can't stress that enough. We cannot forget that. Because the minute we say something like, you can even talk to me about scary feelings and germs, all of a sudden, we lost the relationship. That is a fracture. That is a break. And we've undermined the trust. We've undermined the relationship. And we've undermined the freedom. So, Yana, I hope that you don't take this as a criticism. It's not at all. This happens all the time. We feel pressure. We feel like it's not working. We feel like it's taking too long. We get reports that parents are not happy because behavior is worsening. There's all of this input coming to us. Fix it, fix it, fix it, fix it. So we get ahead of ourselves. But the reality is, and I've talked about this a lot, it is never, ever absolute double on purpose, because I mean it that much. It is never, ever child-centered play therapy plus anything else. It's not child-centered play therapy plus germs, not child-centered play therapy plus anxiety, not child-centered play therapy plus talking about how scared you are. No, it's never plus anything. It's child-centered play therapy, non-directive, child-led. The child knows when they can handle, what they can handle, why they can handle, how they can handle. They know. And we cannot devalue that because the child will lead the way. We just have to get out of it. So that's my thought on that. And then finally, as far as worsening symptoms go, things always get worse before they get better. You actually need to say that phrase to parents in the initial parent consultation when you're discussing expectations and the process. Add that to your framework that you're going to look at every single consult. So you're saying exactly the same things every single time. Add that to your system and your framework so that you make sure that you say things are probably going to get worse before they get better. And it is extremely important in a scenario like this, when we get pressure from parents, to not only articulate all of this, like I mentioned before, but specifically to normalize this. It is extremely normal for a child's symptoms to get worse. It is extremely normal to see regression. It is extremely normal for anxious kids to fear their fear. They fear the growth. They fear the change. They fear the unknown. They fear feeling the weight of all of this anxiety that they're carrying around. So, of course, this is all unfolding. This is a very normal process. So normalizing and reassuring is also extremely important in a scenario like this. And I just have one, I have two final thoughts. So one is about what you might encourage parents to do to help, but more specifically, what in a scenario like this we need to be doing as therapists. The most important thing that we can do for a scenario like this is to reflect her feelings. And we have to help parents understand the value of doing so at home. Because she obviously has no emotional vocabulary. She has no emotional maturity. She can't express her feelings or articulate them well. So she's not identifying them appropriately. She's not communicating them effectively. And therefore, she's an anxious mess. She's obviously also an internalizer. So she doesn't even have a healthy outlet for these feelings. So in a scenario like this, in the playroom, oh my goodness, the number one goal you should have is to be reflecting her feeling at all times. But parents need to also be doing this at home to further support the work, and you need to help them understand the value of that. So reflecting feelings would be very important as one of the skills that you would use as one of the four pillars. And then my final thought is when you mentioned that she's drawing hearts and flowers and pretty things, you interpreted that as she's being resistant because she's not ready to do the work. My opinion is that's actually ideal versus actual play. So ideally, her world is happy and pretty and calm and filled with things like hearts and flowers and things that are soothing and enjoyable and just full of life and goodness and things that make her smile. It's actually technically an antidote to her real world, which is all consumed and overwhelmed by her levels of fear and anxiety and worry and all of this stuff. So oftentimes kids will draw the ideal when they have the polar opposite in actuality. So that's actually very powerful play, even though I know it can be interpreted that she's avoiding things. She's actually painting a picture. I mean, not literally, maybe she's just drawing it, but she is demonstrating her ideal, which is, I don't want to live like this. I don't want to be scared all the time. I don't want to be miserable. I don't want to be worried. I don't want to be anxious. I would love a world with hearts and flowers and birds and rainbows. So ideal versus actual is very powerful there. And that is something that parents need to be aware of. She is working on things. She's resolving this conflict of ideal versus actual, which means she's working toward merging them together. Because kids don't do ideal versus actual to leave them separate. They build the bridge and they fuse them. So Yana, thank you so much for the question. I hope that that is helpful. I hope that's helpful to all of us. It's really, really important when we have scenarios like this to handle them well for the benefit of the child more than anything, but also us as clinicians, the parents involved, et cetera, all of that comes together in a really meaningful way when we handle it well. So I hope that that's so helpful to you. If you'd like to reach out to me, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com is how you'll do that. And if you would like more information about training opportunities, you can go to playtherapynow.com. And as a side note, for those of you who have emailed me just to let me know what this podcast means to you, many of you do not even have questions. You just take time to reach out and let me know how you listen and why you listen and what you've gained from it and how you've benefited. And all of you at the practice are listening to it in your supervision and training or whatever the scenario is, just thank you. I really, those aren't really that big of words, and I feel like I need something more than that. But I just hope you know how very much that means to me. I hope you know that every single email that I get, I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for the person that wrote me every email. I know it's not just the email, it's the person writing it. But truly, this is the most amazing community. And this is such a cool family that has been birthed out of this Play Therapy podcast. And it continues to grow and it continues to have reach all over the world. And so for those of you that ask questions, I love them. I will cover them. Thank you for sending questions. But as a related aside, thank you for those of you that have just reached out to say, hey, this is how I've learned. This is how I've grown. This is what I'm doing with your podcast. Thank you. That really, truly means a lot to me. So I'm grateful for each and every one of you. I'm glad that we're on this child-centered play therapy journey together. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.